Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. I want to start with a big thank you to everyone who supported WIPR during the fund drive we wrapped up last night. You are the wind beneath our wings. You make everything we do here at Your Public Radio possible, and we are very grateful. One of the qualities you tell us you value about what you hear on WIPR is context, and that leads us directly to this morning's topic. A knowledge of history leads to a better understanding of the present and perhaps insight into the future. Our guests today recognize the power in that. Later in the show, we'll hear about Maryland History Day, a statewide competition that challenges middle and high school students to bring a favorite history lesson to life. With us now is David Armenti, Director of Education at the Maryland Historical Society. He's here to tell us about Maryland Day, observed this Sunday, March 25th. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you, Sheila.
Thanks for being here. What does Maryland Day commemorate?
Maryland Day commemorates the initial arrival and settlement of English colonists who had made their way to the Chesapeake, specifically landing at St. Clement's Island and ultimately settling around the area that's now known as St. Mary City.
And that was 1634, right?
1634, correct.
Who made up that first group of colonists?
So it was an interesting group of folks, and it's important to recognize some of the origins of the charter that was granted to Maryland, which would go to the Calvert family. So this was a Catholic family coming out of England. So the gentlemen of the voyage, who were the wealthy folks, some of them investors, many of them Catholic, were a minority on that group. And you had a total of about...
The gentlemen were a minority or the Catholics were a minority?
The gentlemen, many of whom were Catholic, were a minority on that group. So we had about 140 or so folks coming over on those first two ships, the Ark and the Dove, and maybe about 17 of them were what we would call gentlemen, people of standing, people of some wealth, and many of those folks were Catholic on those initial voyages.
And the rest were?
The rest were Protestants. Most would act as servants, farmers who were going to support the settlement of the new colony. Some were actually indentured servants whose passage had been paid by the gentleman and who would then work off their service through the course of some years.
They were indentured for a particular period of time.
Yes. And that would be a system that became very common in Maryland in the early colonial years. But you did have some of those servants initially on that first voyage.
What was it like here when they arrived? Where did they live?
So they landed on St. Clement's Island, which was not largely inhabited. So they were finding a place that they had to kind of settle and establish themselves. Now, that would change shortly thereafter when they bought land from some of the local Native Americans. And to some extent, they had a bit of infrastructure there left behind by the Native Americans. But they were largely starting fresh. But as we know from some of the observations of Father Andrew White, a Jesuit priest who was on that initial voyage, they were very impressed with the natural bounty that they were able to find here in the Chesapeake Bay region. Father White remarked on the size of the oysters, the amount of birds, the amount of foliage and fauna in the area. So especially considering that it was the beginning of spring, they actually found something that was very impressive here and were able to draw from the natural resources.
And you said they at some point were able to use some of the infrastructure of the Native Americans?
Yes.
How so?
In a way that the area around what would become St. Mary City was inhabited. So land had been cleared, for example. There were areas that had been used for farming and agriculture. So there was some level of settlement and planning around the area that would become St. Mary City, the first major settlement of the English colonists in Maryland. So they were able to build on what the Native Americans had already established in that region.
Well, did they push the Native Americans off the land where they settled?
Not exactly. No, it was especially when we compare this to colonial settlements in other areas, say Jamestown or Massachusetts Bay, it was a relatively peaceful process. So land was actually purchased around the St. Mary City area in exchange for hatchets and other supplies that were coming from the English end. So it was a peaceful transaction, largely peaceful relations in the early years.
So you say that was different from what we know about colonization, the colonization story in Massachusetts or Virginia. What are some of the other differences?
So the potential for violence and the actual incidents of violence had been well documented, especially in Virginia. So English colonists coming over on the Ark and the Dove were certainly aware of this possibility, and there was a specific mandate from the Calvert family to do everything possible to keep this peaceable. So that meant, you know, to some extent, respecting the wishes and the thoughts of the Native American groups in that area. But again, the large set of land that was initially purchased was done legitimately, even if we are kind of lacking in the historical record the perspective of the Native Americans, we at least know from Father White that the transaction was done peaceably.
You mentioned the distinction between indentured servants and slaves. Was that also a difference with other colonization efforts? Were there slaves in other colonies?
Sure. So Virginia is actually where Maryland was modeling a lot of its development in labor and in legislation around that labor. So in the very early years of the colony in the 1630s and 1640s, you're certainly looking at a largely indentured white European labor force. There were some people of African descent. In fact, there was a man named Matthias de Sousa, who was, as we understand it, a person of mixed race who had African descent. He may have been Catholic himself, who was actually an indentured servant of Father Andrew White and would ultimately become free in the years after, and would even vote in the General Assembly of Maryland in the 1640s. But as we get later into the mid-1600s, late 1600s, there are more and more enslaved Africans, people of African descent, in the colony, and the laws start to reflect a distinction between them and the white indentured servants.
You said Catholics were actually, by number, a minority of the group that came first, but we think of Maryland as a Catholic colony. So which is right?
Both are right. So the reason why Maryland would become a Catholic colony, per se, was due to the leadership of the Calvert family. So they, being a Catholic family in England, and identifying themselves as such, were seeking a place where there was relative religious tolerance, we'll say. It was not religious freedom in any modern understanding, but the fact that Catholics and other Christian groups were by law in the colony allowed to practice openly was in a way revolutionary for the time.
How is Maryland Day celebrated?
Well, at the Maryland Historical Society, we are actually having an event this Saturday called Maryland's Fabulous Fair, A Taste of History, in which we'll be featuring some of those very well-known Maryland dishes like your oysters, like your Smith Island cakes and other favorites. So it'll be an opportunity to not only learn about the food, but get into the museum and learn more about the origins of the colony and the state and see some of the fabulous items and collections that we have about that topic.
So that's at the Historical Society. How else is Maryland Day celebrated?
Especially in historic St. Mary City in southern Maryland, there are often commemorations and celebrations around Maryland Day, which takes the form of almost a Thanksgiving Day type of feast, if we are again to compare to the Massachusetts Bay Colony. So there's an emphasis on food. There's an emphasis on the peaceful relations with the Native Americans that were in that area. So that would include reenactments. That would include the celebration of traditional Maryland foods like oysters, and other things that you would have found in the colonial era that we still identify today as Maryland foods.
From your perspective as an educator, why is it important for us to know the history of Maryland Day?
It's especially important to know the history of Maryland Day because this is part of what creates our identity as Marylanders. We often think about the colonial story and the era of exploration through the case studies of Massachusetts and Virginia. Well, this is the Maryland story. It's very unique. It's very distinct from those other stories, although we can use them as a point of comparison. So particularly as an educator, it allows us to look at the Catholic origins of the colony, to know why the Calvert name is so prominent and so celebrated still here in Maryland, and to know that Maryland really was a model of religious tolerance in an era where that wasn't common. So this became really a unique instance of a colony developing, but also creating its own identity aside from some of the other English colonies in the area.
That's David Armenti, Director of Education at the Maryland Historical Society. Here on The Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're speaking about Maryland Day, and we're joined now by Phoebe Stein, Executive Director of Maryland Humanities. She's here to tell us about the Maryland History Day competition coming up next month on Saturday, April 28th. Welcome, Phoebe.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So what is Maryland History Day?
Maryland History Day is a year-long competition for middle and high school students where they do original historical research about historical topics of their choice.
And culminates in competitions?
It does. We have 27,000 middle and high school students in Maryland who participate in the program, and they do compete at the school and then at a district level, and then we also run, Maryland Humanities runs the state contest, which you mentioned, Saturday, April 28th at UMBC, Go Retrievers.
So is this something kids volunteer for, or do some teachers assign it?
Some teachers assign it. It is required in some social studies classrooms, and then others volunteer.
How is Maryland Humanities involved?
Well, we oversee the entire project. So the program itself, History Day, began in 1983 in Calvert County, and Maryland Humanities came to oversee it in November 1999. So we're going on almost 20 years of organizing the program. We run the state contest here in Maryland, and then we help to organize all of the participation.
David, how are you involved? How is the Maryland Historical Society involved?
So the education department at the Maryland Historical Society, we are really excited about supporting projects of students, particularly if they're taking on local topics. So we provide, for example, primary source collections from our archive and library, as well as point students to connections with our exhibits and support the research process, because it can be very intimidating, especially as a middle school student coming into this project, to know where do you go to find these resources? How do you properly do research to really create a great project? So we support them in that process.
Phoebe, does everybody pick a Maryland-related topic?
They don't need to necessarily. The topics can be very broad and range from international topics, but we do have quite a few, because of our wonderful historical resources here, we do have quite a few topics that center on Maryland history. We know this year we have exhibitions on Henrietta Lacks. One of the students is also doing an exhibit on civil rights pioneer and Baltimorean Lily Carol Jackson. So we do have some local focus here as well. We also know that the Calverts, the family that was mentioned earlier, there is a project on the Calverts and the Crosslands and the Maryland flag. That's going to be a paper that's going to be presented. I should say that the students not only get to choose their topics, but they get to choose their media. So they can do a performance, a paper, a website, a documentary, an exhibition. So they have lots of choice in how they approach. And I just want to emphasize that Maryland Humanities could not do this work without our partners, Maryland Historical Society, of course, and then all of the incredible teachers and school administrators and principals, all the school districts that participate.
And I'm still trying to keep in mind all these different media they can use. A paper, an exhibit, a video, a performance.
Website.
And or a website.
And websites are on the rise. That's a very popular trend for our students.
How do you judge all these various offerings?
Well, we have, and those people are our community volunteers. We have hundreds of community volunteers. Some are professional historians, but not the majority. We have parents and teachers and attorneys and folks who are retired. And those people volunteer their time to talk with these students. So they are given instructions. We have guidelines for how to judge these projects. The very important thing to know about Maryland History Day is that we are asking these students to use primary sources and to come to understand the difference between a primary source and a secondary source. And at the base of that is critical thinking, to think very critically about where their information is coming from. And that's why we think this program is so vitally important. But to folks out there, you don't need any special expertise to be a judge. Just time, patience with our middle and high schoolers. And we do have some volunteer opportunities available for that April 28th History Day. We still need some judges.
Some judges.
We have 700 students who are going to show up who want to talk with you about their work.
We will put a link on our website on the record page at WIPR.org
of
how people can volunteer for that. David, what is it like when students get to see and handle historic documents? How do they react?
It's really an incredible experience because it's not something that students really ever imagine they'd be able to do. They think that these things are going to remain behind glass or in a folder on a shelf somewhere. But we give them the opportunity to handle the original, try to read handwriting of somebody from the 1600s, for example. So it's really a moment where their eyes light up and they see it's a really special opportunity to learn in a unique way.
Well, I thank you both for making it exciting for us, too. Thank
you. Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
David Armenti is Director of Education at the Maryland Historical Society. Phoebe Stein is Executive Director of Maryland Humanities. As I said, we have information at the On the Record page at WIPR.org about Maryland Day this Sunday, March 25th, and some festivities around the state, as well as information about Maryland History Day, the Maryland History Day competition in 5 weeks on Saturday, April 28th. I'm Sheila Cash. Short break here on the record, and then a Stoop story about a genuine Merlin experience. Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.